Bam. Done. Woo!
Welcome to the WAN Show, ladies and gentlemen. If you have any issues viewing the stream, go head over to twitch.tv/LinusTech. It seems to be working just fine on Twitch. We have done as much diagnosis as we can while the stream was offline, and as far as we can tell, we have no idea.
Yeah, it started working on a test channel, and it looks like it's still a little borked right now.
Yeah, so that's pretty sweet.
I don't know.
Yeah, so there you go.
What's the bug now?
It's just doing the same thing. It just hitches every once in a while.
Yeah, well, it was yellow for a while at first on the test stream as well, so we don't know.
Can you hover over it?
It doesn't say anything, Jake. Hovering over it does nothing. It just says, okay, viewers may be experiencing minor issues. And then it'll probably turn green again. It was green while everyone was complaining last time. So we are going to start over. We've got a great show for you guys today. The big news, I mean, actually,
Johnny Ive.
Yeah. Johnny Ive is leaving Apple, but it's also not the end of the world because he is going to continue to be involved.
Okay.
Yeah. So Apple might be okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, well, it depends on whether you think Apple's okay now. So for better or for worse, okay, you know what, we'll talk about it more later. Intel's internal memo reveals that they are impressed by AMD's progress. Now, that is
facts.
High praise indeed.
That is. For it to be in an internal memo, that's pretty high praise. But again, like I said before we killed the stream, internal memos are basically just blog posts now.
Have you read the memo, though?
No.
It's pretty impressed. We'll talk about
it
more
later. They must have also known this was going to hit media and going to hit AMD.
Yeah, I guess. I don't understand what they could possibly... Yeah, okay, we'll talk about it more later.
Yep.
Talk
DisplayPort 2.0 spec announced, and it's amazing, and probably, I'm assuming, still won't work at good distances. And a laser can identify people based on heartbeat at over 600 feet away, which sounds totally not creepy at all. Roll that intro.
Let's roll that intro!
Boom. Those headphones, is that causing echo?
I don't know.
That's pretty loud.
I can't hear them. I don't know how to turn the volume down. I don't even know where they're plugged into. Where are they? Oh, they're plugged in way back there? Yay, alright! We got this! The show today is brought to you by Savage Jerky, Madrinas, and Squarespace. Oh, here comes a train. That's what we needed.
Yeah.
That's what we needed. More issues today.
Yeah. Perfect.
It's Friday, ladies and gentlemen.
I will say in the amazing video that I don't know if it's on YouTube or not yet, but the high refresh rate gaming video.
Yes, that actually hit YouTube yesterday, I believe.
The train segment was hilarious.
That actually happens far more often around here than you guys would probably think. I mean, it's one of those challenging things where the only place that you can find affordable commercial real estate, go figure, happens to be next to the train tracks because nobody wants to live there because nobody wants trains rolling by all times of the night and day when they're trying to sleep or go about their daily lives.
Yeah.
It's just something that we have to deal with because... I don't even know if there is any industrial.
Not near train tracks?
Not near either train tracks or like a superhighway.
Superhighway, heavy trucking road.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. So anywhere where you're gonna have a ton of noise pollution, that's where you stick your commercial zoning.
Yeah.
At least here in the Vancouver area. So the reason that it was particularly bad in that video and that it interrupted us more than it normally would, like sometimes we would just roll through it. Like right now, the train's going, you guys can't really hear it, was because in order to shoot high refresh rate video, we had to have the bay doors open to get as much natural sunlight in as we possibly could. That's why it was a problem.
Interesting.
So every time you double your frame rate, you lose an f-stop. Is that right, Brennan? Lose a stop?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So when you go from 30 FPS, which is what we normally shoot at, to 60, you lose a stop. When you go to 120, you lose another. You go to 240, you lose another. You go to 480, you lose another. Then you go again to 1,000, you lose yet another one. So by the time you turn something up to 1,000 frames per second, if you were trying to use the same lights that we're using right now at 30 frames per second, you're basically looking at a dark frame.
Yeah.
Like there's not much left. Actually, could we compare that? or could we?
On the camera right now?
Yeah, yeah. Like, do we have enough apertures on this camera to?
Well, you just change the shutter speed.
Just change the shutter speed. How do I do that? I don't know how to change the shutter speed. Can I just change the aperture? Which one's aperture?
This is great. Oh, hey, we got the readout on OBS, so everyone gets to see that. That's kind of cool.
Nice. Okay, so we're here. Yep, this is 30 frames per second.
This would be.
So there's a stop. So remember, this is going from 30 to 60.
Another stop.
Okay, so now we're at 120.
This is another stop.
This is what it would look like at 240.
Another stop.
That's what it would look like at 500 frames per second.
And then this is what they were recording at. Yeah.
And so, guys, to put that in the proper context.
It looks so bright now. The on-screen display is.
Oh, yeah. Do you mind, Brendan?
Thank you.
So to put that in context, right now we're shooting with 2 6-foot softboxes in order to, well, look natural. So you basically need direct sunlight. Now, normally when you're shooting in direct sunlight, you would actually apply what's called a neutral density filter or ND filter directly to the front of the lens in order to block out a ton of the light. But when it's high refresh rate you're dealing with, you want as much light as you can possibly get. Even with as much natural light as we could get, some of it was still pretty dark, especially in the upcoming mouse latency testing video that we'll be releasing in the next little bit here. People are discussing aperture. Like aperture science. Wait, didn't Jake turn monitoring off? Those headphones are still clearly on.
Yeah, they're loud.
Hopefully.
Can we just unplug them?
Not a problem. Yeah, I could.
Is it around the back? Oh, sorry. I thought it was on the front.
No, it's way around the back.
Oh, okay. That's kind of not great.
Oh, and it's cable managed.
Oh, boy.
It's like way down there.
Oh, jeez.
No, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to...
Like bury them?
No. Nope.
Put them under your shirts.
I'm just going to put them over here.
Okay.
And then in here.
Cool.
There, shut up.
Okay. Sounds good.
This is the problem I run into whenever I'm not the one who sets things up, because it's like, it's not complicated. It's just, you know, which audio source is mapped to which output. But, like, if I didn't do it, I don't know exactly the way that someone else configured it.
Yeah.
And there's also hardware ways to do that with our setup.
So it's like your dad setting up your home theater system in the 90s. Like, no one's allowed to touch it after it's done.
You know,
don't
a Logitech,
change anything.
Logitech Harmony remote changed my life. Because it's, relatively speaking, once you get your IR blasters positioned. That's the main challenge, is getting your IR blasters in all the right places so that it actually consistently activates and deactivates things. Also, I had to contact Logitech support to change, I think it was either my TV or receiver. I had to get them to add the menu option for power on and power off instead of a toggle. No, it was my home theater PC. That's what it was. So the only option by default is power toggle. And if you've ever used a universal remote before, you'll know why that's a freaking problem.
Yeah.
Because as soon as it desynchronizes, every time you try to turn the system on, it turns it off.
Yeah.
And you end up in this stupid flip-flop, and you have to get up off your butt, which is what you didn't want to do.
Always
horrible.
Because you
want to play video games or watch TV.
Yeah.
You have to get up off your butt and go manually turn it on and off. And so get this. I complained about this. They went, oh, yeah, that's a known issue. We have to go into your Harmony account and add that option for you. And I went, that's not a solution. So yes, my home theater works perfectly, but can I recommend a Harmony remote to someone else who has a media PC as part of their TV setup? No, I can't, because that is a phenomenally stupid solution to the problem. That should just be an option, because for pretty much everything else in my setup, so I could decide what the activity was. So for your activity, you can decide what the commands it sends are.
Okay.
So my TV has power on or power off or toggle. I can decide. And that's when you launch and when you end the activity, you can tell it which ones to do. But for whatever reason, PC didn't have that option, at least when I set mine
up. So as someone who never
so mad
had a Harmony remote, why do you even have to tell it that it's a PC?
Well, when you have to tell it it's a PC because whenever it's takes the IR input, which is watch PC is what I call mine. So watch PC. It then needs to blast out one after the other, all the things that go with it. So it has to say, receiver, fire up. Receiver, change to this input. And then it has to go, TV, fire up. TV, make sure you're on this input. Then it goes, PC, wake from sleep. So it has to know what that code is supposed to be.
Yeah, okay.
Man, it made me so mad because I was like holding my old Microsoft Media Center remote. And I was like, okay, we have on and we have off. So clearly those codes exist because some devices don't have it.
Yep.
And that's just a problem on the device level.
Yep.
But I was holding a remote and I knew it worked.
So basically,
if
you want to recommend this to anyone with a home theater PC, you have to say, buy it like before you even leave the store? Or no, you'd have to set up an account. So you have to get home and part of the account creation process is calling them?
You're just going to have to get... Now, in Logitech's defense, the Harmony support team was excellent.
Okay. Cool.
But it still made me really mad that I had to talk to them to do something that I should be able to do within the menu.
Talking to anybody makes me mad. So, like, I totally hear you.
Nerd life. Why don't we move into, like, the big news this week?
Yeah.
Jony Ive leaving Apple. So for those not familiar, he's the bald guy with the British accent in the commercials.
Yeah.
The unapologetically plastic guy.
Yeah.
So he's their chief design, or was, chief design officer. He's leaving the company. Apple announced it on Thursday, so that's yesterday. He's considered... And, you know, I guess it depends who you ask.
I'm
sure there's lots of people internally at Apple who are like, yeah, maybe it's time to move on. You know, it depends who you ask, I suppose. But he's considered one of the most important people at Apple, responsible for the industrial design and the look and feel of all major Apple products, including the iPod, iPhone, and the Mac, which really raises the question, what do all the other people there do?
Yeah.
No, I'm serious right now.
In the design department, yeah.
I'm actually serious right now. Because they have so many designers.
Is it maybe like taking his ideas and actually creating them? Like, does he just draft ideas maybe?
And here's another question. Apple doesn't actually have that many products.
Another thing to be fair about with Apple is they seem to overcredit individuals really hardcore.
Right. So that's
why... They'll be like, this individual person is responsible for everything. That happens a lot with Apple. So maybe he's the chief design officer, so maybe he ran those things for all major products.
But
I have
that's
no
not the way that it gets communicated.
I completely agree, but that has been a thing with Apple for a long time. So either Apple basically runs on like 8 people.
Yeah.
Or there's maybe something else going on.
Yeah. Because
this has been true for like the history of Apple.
So, anyway.
Sure, people are going to be on me about
including
that,
iPod, iPhone, and Mac. So he's worked at Apple for more than 20 years, and he's going to start his own design business called Love From, with capital L, capital F, which I'm sure is very important to him.
Extremely.
Apple will be his first client. So he says, while I will not be an employee, I will still be very involved, I hope, for many, many years to come. He doesn't have an immediate successor. So, yeah.
Interesting.
There's a couple of Alan Dye and Evans Hanke will report to Jeff Williams, the Apple's chief operating officer, while Ive reported directly to Tim Cook.
There's a note in here that says, Ive was first noticed by returning CEO Steve Jobs because of his colorful design concept of the iMac. So was he the, like, carry it by the handle, colorful, transparent iMac guy?
If I recall correctly, yes.
That makes sense in terms of timeline.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm old. Okay.
I know, right? Yeah. So anyway, that's both a big deal and then also sort of a nothing burger just because he's still going to work with Apple. He's just...
Hot take. I don't think they've had very inspiring design for a while.
Well, okay. So this is where I... Okay, so this is where...
Oof.
It gets kind of, so I say a lot that I feel like Apple products are designed for people who don't have a lot to do. So if you look
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Quick pause.
Sure.
When's that competition happening?
Not for a few weeks, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so what he's referring to is the editing showdown. Jonathan Morrison from TLD is going to be coming up here to compete in an editing showdown with our very own Taryn Van Hemert.
That was just OBS-like. You guys should have a, like, quick hot takes about the other platform thing before the competition, like, independently.
So Taryn and Jonathan will make their own comments, but I am not there to editorialize. I will be mostly hosting the showdown.
Oh, cool.
So that's my role. We also are working on a panel of celebrity judges.
Okay.
I'm not going to comment on their status yet because I don't want there to be any, like, pressure on them or anything, but I have certainly reached out for the premiere side of things. We wanted a panel of four judges, two that are more steeped in the Final Cut ecosystem, and two that are more premiere folks.
Okay.
And so I have reached out to Eber from Hardware Canucks, as well as Nico from the Corridor Digital crew.
Oh, cool.
And I have received receptive responses from both, but neither of them are confirmed.
Okay.
So I would love to have them on our panel of celebrity judges, but it's always complicated coordinating people with such busy schedules to be here in the studio to evaluate.
Creators are difficult to wrangle.
It really, and I don't blame them at all. I totally get it because my schedule is stupid.
Yeah, I literally have no idea when he's in the country or not.
Okay, so back to my point about Apple products seemingly being designed for people who don't have a lot to do. Have you ever used Apple's calendar app?
No.
It's utterly worthless.
Genuinely.
Like, you just...
Google Calendar's great.
You can't... Even Google Calendar... Okay, so, yeah, that's good. So even Google Calendar, compared to... There's a third-party app called Business Calendar that's only available for Android. It's not available on iOS. And it is... full beast mode. Like, tiny text. You can configure it this way. You can have, like, tiny text, so you can actually read everything. And you can actually tell what the hell you're looking at.
Meeting coordination in Google Calendar is fantastic, though.
Yes.
So, and that's the main thing I like using it for.
Apple's calendar app, by comparison, simply has no way to configure it with the same degree of display density.
Okay.
So it seems to make the assumption that you either don't have a lot on your plate, or you have all the time in the world to drill down and look at things.
Oh, you mean like, okay. I thought you meant in terms of one, like you wanted to be able to read everything of one task, but you mean you can read your entire day by making it all really short.
You can read the entire month.
Oh,
like all the agenda items for that day from the month view on this business calendar app. And it's just, it's a whole other level. Like,
That's pretty cool.
I was telling Yvonne because she had issues with, she had some issues with Android. Because let's face it, there are some issues with Android.
Yeah.
She had some issues with Android, and I said, look, why don't you try an iPhone for a bit? And she tried it, and she was like, this is completely unusable because there isn't a replacement. She tried every calendar app for iOS.
Also, really annoying. I have to carry one now, and it won't stop yelling at me about Apple Pay.
Yeah, I know, right?
And like everything else, it's like, hey, you should use this feature. Yeah. I'm going to pop up 10 million times.
I don't want this to turn into a rant about iOS.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a SIM in it, there's no way to disable the, hey, there's no SIM installed. I know! You're an iPod right now, okay? I don't care!
What do but you do? I pass butter. Deal with it.
It cannot handle that. It's like, no, I am iPhone.
Yeah.
I am a phone. Where is your SIM card?
I deserve a SIM card. I was born with SIM card privilege.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah, look at this. Asteroid Week says, or Asteroid says, week mode in business calendar is the best. Yeah, it pretty much is. So,
that's
so anyway,
cool.
So I end up with this sort of observation almost every time I go to use an Apple product because the amount of sort of manual drilling down of things just annoys me. And you know what? iPad OS looks like it's going to address a lot of my complaints about iOS on a large screen device.
iPad has been very interesting lately.
Apple seems determined to resurrect this sort of, I won't say failing, but I will say stumbling business unit. Yeah. They've had a really hard time convincing anyone who already has an iPad that they should get a new one. And that's been the only tablet in my house is an iPad 2.
A lot of the things you're going to do with it doesn't really matter. You can still do it.
Just
be fine.
Put the kids in front of it when I need a break. That's basically its only job.
You entertain the young ones.
Like, and the thing too the is that wings. I don't even use it for that often, but it's still perfect for that because it's an iPad. So you leave it for 2 weeks and the battery's still alive. You can never do that with an Android tablet.
Yeah.
And so the very occasional time that I use it, it's ready to rock and I can go take a nap.
It's the nap machine.
The nap machine.
This machine creates
naps. The iNap.
That would actually be an adorable commercial.
They would never do that. Apple's marketing collateral is all about what a creative, intellectual person their product turns you
into.
No,
but like,
it's not about
like
getting a rest.
It would be cool if they just named it like a million different things. And they could even go back to that, like, put the I there and then rotate the word. And they could like for this person, it's the iNap, and it creates naps for them. For someone else, it's like the iCreate, and they can throw that crap in. And then for someone else, it's iGame, whatever. I feel like that could be actually kind of entertaining.
They would never do it.
Nope.
They would never do it.
Speaking of things I thought they would never do, Intel internal memo reveals they're impressed by AMD's progress.
Yeah, this is kind of hilarious.
This is wild.
So I'm going to try and bring up the actual memo because it's freaking awesome. Okay, yeah, here it is on Tech Power Up. If you guys want to read the whole thing, make sure you head over there. But basically, here we go. We are now entering the latest chapter of the tech industry's single long-running business rivalry. Intel and AMD have been competing for many of the same chip customers for more than 50 years. Oh, wait, no, this is Tech Power Up's introduction. Where's Intel's thing? Following AMD's blah, blah. Oh, here it is. Why AMD is now a formidable competitor.
Wow.
Was actually
that alone.
A subheading in the internal memo.
That alone is huge.
Right?
Oh, man.
So they basically go, yeah, they've had 2 years of greater than 20% annual revenue growth, thanks basically to Ryzen and Epic. And then they pretty much attribute it, not entirely, but a big part of it, to the strategic refocus on premium high-performance products. Now, I do have to look at that and go, I feel like it's a little bit oversimplified and or even misleading.
Yeah.
I'm sure if AMD could have built high-performance products 5 years ago, they would have. They just had nothing.
Yeah.
Like, they had straight up nothing.
Kind of like Intel right now. Oh!
I mean, it's not like Zen doesn't scale down to low-performance products. They can do a quad-core processor if they want.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, back to a particularly dark time in AMD's history. They could build a tri-core processor if they really wanted to.
Yeah.
They just don't.
That was awkward.
They're not stuck making just that. Like, it scales down just fine. The issue was they just had nothing. Anyway. Back to the memo though. So key AMD competitive threats are from high-end products. I also think that's kind of another funny one because what do you mean by high-end products specifically? The key AMD threat is across your entire product stack, all the way from like $100 to $200 CPUs, which last I checked is pretty low end.
Yeah.
All the way to many core data center products, which, yes, is a high-end product. Maybe what they're referring to here specifically was AMD's focus on APUs because that was the... Whoops. AMD's focus on APUs because that was the only thing that they could build that had competitive performance, and only because their onboard graphics were so much better than Intel's, not because the CPU cores were competitive. Maybe that's what they mean by this, but, like, I think, again, that's... A little misleading because almost everything Intel's built in the last few years on the consumer side is an APU by AMD's definition.
Yeah. The height of the APU war was kind of a pretty weird time. It was a very weird time because everyone wanted to people wanted to support AMD. So everyone would flex the APU GPU performance.
Yeah.
And then no one would run it that way because it wasn't really good enough for almost anything. So really awkward time.
Hi, Ed. What can I do for you?
Did you do the VS?
I didn't. How badly do you need them?
No, we can get that next week.
We can get that next week?
Yeah.
Cool.
Like first thing next week.
Cool. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's have a look at some of the other subheadings here. So, man, this like This is like a scary time to be Intel. Like, I can see why they're sending out this memo. It's like, look, guys, we have to acknowledge this stuff. AMD has recently been gaining some traction in winning public cloud offerings.
That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, AMD's upcoming next-generation Zen Core products, codenamed Rome for servers and Matisse for desktop, will intensify our desktop and especially server competition. Intensify the forward firepower! The latter is likely to be the most intense in about a decade, which is another way of saying AMD had nothing for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's true. Okay. I mean, they're even acknowledging the notebook and the notebooks and business PC competition. That's incredible. Now, this is, again, sort of misleading. By leveraging TSMC's 7-nanometer manufacturing, AMD no longer manufactures its own chips. They got to get that in there. AMD can drive higher
real
core counts
fabs
and higher performance. Now, they acknowledge it later on in the memo, but that's not really the main reason that AMD is able to drive higher core counts and higher performance. Yes, GlobalFoundries did stumble. We know this. But AMD wasn't on TSMC's 7-nanometer node for Ryzen Gen 1, and Ryzen Gen 1 was a return to competition. Really, it just has more to do with AMD's modular approach to their core design. That is a big part of the reason that AMD can drive higher core counts. And AMD's been driving higher core counts than Intel for a couple of years now. The big thing that's happening now is the IPC improvements with Zen 2 that are making these many core desktop processors now competitive even in single-threaded tasks, allegedly. This is all still based on AMD data and or leaks. What can I do for you? Oh, yes. Here's a prompter remote. Thank you, Dennis.
So one thing that I think is kind of going on in parallel to this is Intel's community communication and marketing, whatever you want to call it, not necessarily PR to the masses, because they seem to be pretty on top of, at the very least, communicating with enterprise-level stuff.
Right.
But enterprise-level stuff, other than trust in terms of it will work, doesn't really care that much.
Nope. They'll use, because a lot of these, so the thing that you guys got to understand is, for a consumer, they buy something with the expectation that it has already been validated for them. If you're designing a supercomputer, like if we were to go to the very, very high end of the enterprise space, if you're designing a supercomputer, you are in some ways expecting the hardware to have problems. And you are expecting that you are engineering a solution around them as part of your design process. That's the reason why you'll see the latest supercomputer spinning up when there's literally a generation newer hardware available to consumers or to the SMB market or whatever the case may be, because that design process happened, you know, 18 to 24 months ago. So yes, they get early access to the hardware so that they can work on this design, but there's only so much you can do. Like, the silicon's just not finished yet.
But I think I noticed something. So I went to a lot of conventions. I would go to PAXs like crazy and all this kind of stuff. And Intel started doing something where they pulled out of conventions. Intel was in conventions for a very, very long time.
They were huge at PAX up until like a couple years ago, I think.
Yeah, and Intel was like at the start of PAX. And Intel was a big deal there. And they held a big deal position for a very long time. And their booth kind of shrank. And eventually it became a little bit less experiential and check out our crazy products. And it became look at our partners' products and stuff like that, but it was still there. It was still really interesting. It still brought actually a lot of people in. Compared to many booths on the floor that were hardware-based, they were very active. I know like Corsair was really active and stuff too, but they were very active. And AMD didn't really exist. AMD was not, what are you doing?
I'm spamming twitch.tv/LinusTech in the chat because people are complaining about the lag. We don't know what the issue is, but it's something to do with YouTube. But then again, it's happening on Floatplane too.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, our stream is perfect on Twitch. Just go over there.
The actually most confusing part is that it is working on Twitch. But that's cool. So here we go. So right around when Intel, who had this like literally complete market share, although there's only two of them, for processors showing up at conventions, they disappear. AMD shows up And AMD showed that that was literally the most perfect timing for AMD and the worst timing for Intel ever. Yep. Because Intel loses this, like, and I know ROI on conventions is like ridiculous and terrible and hard to track, but
don't talk too much about that though. We have our own convention now.
Yeah. But to tie into that convention, the sentiment you get from those people.
Yep. And these are influencers.
Really strong.
Yeah.
And then they're going to go talk to their friends and they're going to talk on forums. They're going to do everything else. So it spreads out like crazy. And when you can have that interaction as a hardware company in person, which you almost never have, it's super valuable.
And that doesn't mean that Intel not showing up all of a sudden generates negative sentiment. Like, it's not that simple. But Intel loses their opportunity to say, you know, hey, we're good too, right around the time that AMD is coming in banging this, we're awesome right now, drum, we're super awesome, check it out.
And like AMD shows up with crazy booths now that are really interesting, they're doing giveaways, they have the, like their booths are banging and they show up out of nowhere. It's just really, and that seems to be happening not just at the convention level. That's somewhere where it's extremely tangible. You can see it happen. Intel disappeared. AMD showed up, and they completely took over the convention space.
I've been asked, as a longtime Intel user, by, I forget whether it was over Twitter or on our forum or something, but I've been asked, would you consider an AMD chip for your next rig? And I was like, yeah, of course. Like, the only reason that I'm not running AMD now is that it isn't the highest performance solution right now. Because the thing is, and I don't want, like, this is not a flex thing. This is not, like, trying to rub it in or anything like that. But I am not budget constrained for my computer. So I've had a lot of people ask me over the last couple of years, well, AMD is competitive. Why are you still running Intel? Because it's faster.
It might not be the best option if you're building different price tier computers.
Exactly. So depending on what kind of a price point you're targeting, AMD might make a ton of sense. And I've recommended AMD plenty. But no, I haven't been using it because why would I? Well, that looks like it might change. So depending on how our evaluation of Ryzen 3rd Gen goes, it's very possible. Like people treat me like I've never had an AMD computer. You know what? Just for fun, I'm going to try and list out all the processors I've ever run.
Oh, I can't remember this. Every time you do this, I'm like, I have no idea what I had.
It's going to be really hard. Okay, so the first CPU I ever owned was a Pentium 90. Like, this was my personal tower. I inherited it from my uncle. It was a Pentium 90 in, like, the early 2000s. So it was, like, pretty slow.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the first rig I ever built for myself, Athlon XP 2500 Plus.
Heck yeah.
Bought me that 2500 Plus, baby. Then I got a 2500 Plus mobile because it overclocked a little better. Overclocked that thing to 3200 Plus. But guys, AMD fans, speaking from the heart, for heart to heart here, okay? We were deluding ourselves if we thought that a 3200 Plus was actually equivalent to a 3.2 gigahertz Northwood C, okay? That was not a thing that was real.
2% of the audience understands what's going on.
Next
right
CPU was, I believe it was a Clawhammer, I want to say it was a 3200 Plus. It was the one with less cache. Was it North something? Shoot.
Okay,
so no, not Northbridge. Get, go on, get out of here.
Northy Bridge.
No.
Ivy Sandy.
Okay, so Sledgehammer was FX only, and then Clawhammer was the single core, whatever. It was a socket 754, single core Athlon 64. It was a huge upgrade, and the reason that I went to that was because at the time, games were predominant, basically exclusively single-threaded. So hyper-threading, while it was nice for your overall system responsiveness, did not make a difference for games, and games was 90%+ of what I did on my rig. So I picked up an Athlon 64 single-core. Okay, my next upgrade was to socket 939. And the reason that I had to go from 754 to 939, I was super pissed off. Like, that's another thing. AMD fans are so quick to point at Intel for retiring their, you know, their motherboard chipsets so frequently and making you buy a new motherboard. It's like, don't imagine for a second that AMD's hands are clean in all of this either. Socket 754 lasted for like 10 months or something stupid like that. I can't remember what it was. And 940 on the desktop was even worse. So I went to socket 939 and picked myself up. This was the most expensive CPU I ever bought for myself. It was a 4400 plus. And the reason I went for that was because it was the first consumer dual core processor, not counting like, I don't even know, was Itanium multi-core? I don't know, it doesn't matter. The point was, it was the first dual core processor that you could buy for the desktop. It was the full 1 meg cache. Was it 1 meg per core or 1 meg? Can't remember, compared to the 4200 plus, which had less cache. So that meant that with overclocking, you could get full 4800 plus performance, which was, other than the FX line, which was basically dumb because it was just an overclocked, the other thing. So other than the FX line, it was the fastest consumer chip you could get. So from my 4800 plus, what did I go to? I got an Opteron 165. Are you noticing a pattern here? Noticing a pattern?
A lot of AMD
chips. A lot of AMD. Isn't that funny?
Most of my growth was on AMD chips as well.
So I got an Opteron 165, and the reason for that was it overclocked slightly better. That was around the same time I picked up ASRock's very unique AGP and PCI Express board, because I had an AGP card at the time, and I wanted to move to PCI Express
later.
Those were
kind of cool.
It was a great overclocking board, shockingly, other than the fact that you couldn't run 1T on your memory timings no matter what you did. I tried everything. All right, from there, I went to the E6600. Now, why would I do that? Well, because Conroe was a performance revolution. It was a complete game changer. It absolutely curb stomped the aging Athlon 64. And AMD didn't catch up. So from there, I went to Q6600. From there, I went to Q9650 very temporarily. I borrowed that one from work. I think it was a QX9650, excuse me. Borrowed that one from work, delitted that. I believe I was the first person to ever delit a QX9650.
You delitted a work thing?
Don't worry about it.
Oh. Interesting.
From there, I picked up a Core i7-920. Man, that was a beast of a chip. Got myself, this was right around the time that Qimonda went out of business. So Qimonda, remember Qimonda?
Yeah,
so their Aineon consumer lineup of memory. I don't even know if this is interesting to people. They might not even be watching. I don't care. It doesn't matter. So their Aineon brand, they had these 1 gig DIMMs that they were liquidating for, I think our cost was $20 a pop. And at the time, that was nuts.
Wild. Yeah,
it was wild. So NCIX bought everything that we could take. And internally, we were buying them at cost. So it was sick. So I bought, so I still have some of that Aineon memory.
Okay, hold on. One quick second here, just out of interest. Yeah. In that era, upgrading your RAM was like a huge deal. And
so,
happened a lot.
Yes and no.
Think.
No, we were a little bit after that. RAM was not affecting gaming performance anymore, especially because on the 1366 platform, it was triple channel memory.
Yeah,
so you had
a little bit before that.
Six memory slots. So when I had, were they 2 gig DIMMs? I think they were 2 gigs for $20. They were 2 gig DIMMs for $20, and you could get the 1 gig ones for $10.
I just remember when we first started playing like EverQuest.
I never played EverQuest.
Everybody had to go get more RAM.
I had a life.
Everybody that I knew had to like go get more RAM in order to play EverQuest. But everything else worked fine.
I had a job and a girlfriend.
I did not. I was younger though.
Anyway, so sorry. So I went to a 920. Then I think at some point I moved to like an Extreme Edition on that platform that I borrowed from work.
My Extreme, that's the only reason why I actually switched to Intel originally, was because I got a Retail Edge Extreme Edition. And I was like, this deal is way too good.
Yep.
So of course, the price performance here is wild. Yeah.
So Retail Edge, speaking of Retail Edge, I believe I went 3000 series through Retail Edge. And then that was right around the time that I became a product reviewer and I started more legitimately getting chips that I could use in my personal rig from work.
Yeah.
So I've been running Intel since then. And actually, my personal rig, even though I upgraded it, I did publish a video about that recently, I ended up downgrading it again. So I'm still running a 5960X. So I am looking for an upgrade. I need Thunderbolt, which might be a problem. Or maybe I could just run discrete cables. I don't know. I'll figure it out. USB 3 extension cables are a bad time from my experience, though.
Yes.
Nick is standing here very patiently. What can I do for you, Nick?
What's up, dude?
Hey, you did did a really awesome shout out for the merch, and then the
I did,
died.
And then the stream died. Okay, guys.
Oh, right.
I actually totally spaced out because I had done it before. So you know what? We should do our sponsor, starting with the LTT store. lmg.gg/elemental. So I'm going to be completely honest with you folks out there. This shirt has not been a great mover for us. So we are looking to boy, do I have a deal for you, ladies and gentlemen.
It's actually crazy.
You're not going to blame me to my face this time?
I'm going to blame Nick. I'm also going to blame myself for not wearing them. So, because we know that whenever I wear stuff on stream, it actually, you
and
guys
to
are
be
like,
fair,
oh, yeah,
I very rarely see you in these shirts.
I very rarely wear these ones. So they're supposed to be like not super over the top branded, but just like kind of clean. Just like our other shirts, they're American Apparel, so they are super comfy. And they're available in red, orange, blue, and green. I'm kind of partial to the orange one, but, you know, they're all kind of the same. They're in stock in all sizes, from small to triple XL. And if you buy either a hat or a water bottle, both of which we have plenty of stock of, I actually would have really liked to do this as a coupon where you could just buy anything and get $10 off. But there's a lot of stuff that's really popular, like the Stealth hoodie, the hard drive shirt, the CPU shirt that we just don't have enough stock of. And we were worried that we would like launch this promo code and then people would order it, and then they would all be gone. So
did you guys restock water bottles? Is that what happened?
We restocked water bottles already.
Water bottles, like, flew out.
Yeah.
They were gone.
Then we restocked them.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So we're good. We have, I think, a couple thousand water bottles right now, so we should be okay.
Dang.
Yeah, I mean, the store's been doing really, really well. Like, a couple thousand water bottles is, like, okay, but it's not a ton. You guys have been incredibly supportive.
Heck yeah.
So all you gotta do is add to cart an Elemental shirt and either a hat or a water bottle. And you can actually use the code, which is Elemental, up to twice. So you could buy a hat and a water bottle and get $10 off two Elemental shirts. And then you go to checkout and it will automatically apply the code for $10 off the Elemental shirt if you use the lmg.gg/elemental, or you can do it manually at lttstore.com. And the code is Elemental, all caps.
Thanks for supporting our store!
Yeah. Thanks, Nick. Got you, fam. Wow, he almost tripped and died.
But, yeah. But he didn't.
Fantastic.
Agile, man.
Other sponsors for the show today, Squarespace.
Yeah.
Do you need to create a beautiful website without the hassle? Well, check out Squarespace. Their all-in-one platform makes it easy to get up and running quickly, which is why we use it for LinusMediaGroup.com as well as LTXExpo.com. They've got award-winning templates that you can use as a starting point for a wide range of projects. And if you need additional help, Squarespace offers webinars, a full series of help guides, and you can even contact their customer service 24/7 via live chat and email. If you've already got a third-party domain, you don't have to give it up. Just transfer it over to Squarespace. And every Squarespace site includes e-commerce features to help you sell merch or services online and easily manage your inventory and orders. It's squarespace.com/when and offer code WHEN to save 10% on your first purchase, which I guess is a perfect segue into our LTX 2019 update on our Squarespace site. The LTX 2019 Expo map is here!
Yeah.
That's the map. So the BYOC entrance is right here. We've got dedicated bathrooms for you dedicated gamers.
Is there a dedicated BYOC entrance to, like, the convention?
You can use either. But this is the one that is closer to the BYOC.
Okay.
So we're going to tell people, go this way or go that way. And if you guys ignore us, you will ultimately be able to get where you're trying to go. It just will be less efficient.
So question about BYOC stuff. Is that, like, roped off? Or, like,
yes.
How does it... Okay.
Yeah, so the BYOC.
So you guys are starting ahead of the game, because most conventions don't rope off BYOC.
Oh, yeah, you got to have it roped off.
And then it's fine for a couple of years, then things get stolen, and then they have to rope it off.
Remember that the BYOC is not LTX.
Right.
It's DreamHack's BYOC.
They're doing it right.
So they know what they're doing.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So DreamHack's free play is right here, the BYOC is right here. The free play admin and the BYOC admin is here and here. This is the stream studio. I think they're planning to bring some streamers out or something.
Yeah.
This
sure.
is the VIP special guest BYOC, so that's where you'll set up.
Cool. Flow playing people.
Main stage, meet and greet with creators, of which we have like 24 coming now.
I love how where all the flow playing people are is going to be right next to the meet and greet for creators, so I can just try to like poach people as they finish their meet and greets.
There'll be lines for people there too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So very cool.
We're doing Gladiator Jousting, Motherboard House of Cards. We have an entire pallet of PCBs. So people are going to be able to, like, build up. You're going to try and build the tallest house of cards from PCBs. There will be prizes.
Nice.
We have so much prizing. NVIDIA sent over 100 pounds of graphics cards.
I was going to say, wasn't it like you did it based on weight or something? Yeah.
Yeah. That's there's fantastic. Like RTX 2080 Ti's, 2070s, 2060s.
That's awesome.
Zotac is sending three pallets.
Zotac is sending three pallets of prizing. Have they gone mad, son? Yeah.
What? That's amazing.
What are they even drunking?
It kind of makes sense. Okay, I'm going to give you another PAX history thing. Sorry.
Sure.
Early days of PAX, it was much more hardware-based. Right. Like, I remember one year, NVIDIA was an entire wall in the singular convention center that there was, singular convention hall that there was, and, like, many, many, many more hardware booths. And back then, we would come back from conventions with, like, bags of swag, and we would often, like, technically make more off of swag than we spent on the tickets and the trip in general, which was, like, wild, but that happened many times.
Right.
And now, you're lucky if you get, like, a few t-shirts, because it's all gaming companies. I'm not that surprised that this is going on because it's a hardware-based convention. So the hardware guys are just like, yeah, take a bunch of stuff,
so
which is so cool.
We have 3,000 people coming each day, assuming that we sell the rest of the tickets. And like Saturday will be 3,000 people.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying everyone's going to get like a full outfit and a gaming PC.
Oh, yeah, no.
But we are doing our best to source as much
spread it out, so.
Giveaway swag as we can. And really, we want to encourage participation.
Yeah.
If people participate, they will walk away with something. If people don't participate, it's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way that I want it to be. I want LTX
That's how
to
it should be
highly interactive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That totally makes sense.
So back to the layout. Razer is going to be there. This is going to be fun. There's an Escape VR. There's actually a lot of VR experiences.
So is the Escape VR like a room that you have to move through or something?
I don't know exactly how it works, but it's a third-party company that like does these.
Cool.
Yeah. So it should be pretty cool.
It's an escape room in a VR environment.
It's
so
an
it'll
escape.
Be like trussing, and then people will actually be
They able can't to hear you because you're off mic.
Oh, no worries.
So it's an escape room in a VR environment. There's trussing.
Yeah, don't worry. It's fine.
It's dope.
There's also like regular VR gaming. And then there's VR, which isn't really VR because it's more just reality but a camera. RC cars. There's going to be
remote cars.
Board game lounge. Food and beverage, Memex is going to be there, MSI is going to be there, NZXQT is going to be there, BS Mods is going to be there!
Anyone and stuff? Cool. So this year there's actually going to be a bunch of different, like, hardware brands there physically.
And it's going to be hardcore, too. Like, CPU delitting, we're going to have a booth for that again. So Roman Der Bauer sent over a bunch of his delitting tools. He's actually going to be there, by the way.
That's cool.
GPU repasting, that's happening. DreamHack's Indie Playground. Case Toss is back, and you get to toss an old Mac Pro cheese grater.
Kind of really sad.
Gigabyte's going to be there. The Retro Gaming Lounge and Vintage PC area are going to be super cool.
DreamHack Indie Playground. That's actually, I love the indie parts of these kind of shows.
So
too.
It's going to be sick. Don't miss it. Yeah. It's going to be sick. Don't miss it. Also
very
sponsoring
exciting.
The show today, Savage Jerky.
Yeah.
I got a nice little note from Jono. I have to try something new today.
Oh.
Ran out of maple bacon, getting more. Love, Jono. So, you know what? That's fine. The sriracha bacon's actually really good.
So, I finally tried my mojo jalapeno hot sauce.
Yeah.
And it's actually amazing. My favorite part about it is the aftertaste. So, if you eat kind of slowly, which I do, it's perfect.
You're the slowest eater of all time.
Which makes it perfect.
Like, you're so slow.
Yeah.
It's astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, David, I went on a trip with him, and we both ordered a pizza, and we were sitting on the, like, the curb eating it in Germany, because, I don't know, why not?
Sure.
So we're like, eating this pizza. We both eat about half of our pizza, and, well, he ate his half a lot faster than me. Anyway, we both got half a pizza left. We're walking around after. We decide to, like, walk back to the hotel because, like, we're just chilling. It's middle
sure.
of the night.
Yeah.
We're all jet-lagged as hell.
Uh-huh.
And he just, like, throws away his box. And I'm like, dude, like, why'd you just throw away food? Like, that sucks. And he's like, no, I ate it. And I was like, I did not see you. I did not see you open the box, remove food from it, or put it in your mouth. The conversation never faltered. The guy inhales food. I've never seen anything like it.
That's awesome.
Savage Jerky, their goal was to create a snack that's full of flavor and spice, but that isn't bad for you. They've got 13 different flavors of jerky, like their sriracha bacon and maple buffalo bacon, which is my personal favorite. Just looking at a package of maple buffalo bacon makes my mouth water. They also make barbecue sauce, hot sauce, and a spice rub. Their Carolina Reaper hot sauce uses one of the hottest peppers in the world, the Carolina Reaper. And you can use offer code LTT to save 10% on all their products. Also, they have a new amazing offer. Buy two maple bacons and get the third one free. No coupon code necessary, but it does not stack with the 10%. Mm. All right, that's good to know. They stand here to make sure I'm going to do the read right.
Well, did you do this one?
This
is there
one's
one
really
more?
Good, too. The sriracha. Have you tried this one? Sriracha bacon?
I don't think so.
Wow. Yeah, that's really tasty.
They finally got you to try something out, and you like it.
Well, I'm still going back to the maple buffalo.
Okay.
I love the maple buffalo.
At least it got a seal of approval.
Yeah.
That's good enough.
Use code Linus to get 40% off at madrinascoffee.com/Linus.
Approved by... No, I'm going to leave.
Madrina's Coffee is coffee for fuel, organic cold brew coffee in a convenient 15-ounce can with a flavor for everyone. They've got sweet and creamy flavors like their mocha or caramel and bold flavors like their cold brew black. We actually have a permanent item on their store, the Lambo Roast. A couple of permanent items, the Lambo Roast, as well as the vanilla cold brew. So head over to madrinascoffee.com/Linus and get, no way, these guys are nuts, 50% off instead of the regular 40% off for your entire order with code Linus for the next 72 hours. So go. And if you have any questions about the various flavors of cold brew or their micro roast, Shlomo from Madrina's is in the chat and ready to answer your questions through direct messages. All right, we've got a couple more topics that I think we really wanted to talk about today. DisplayPort 2.0. I hate DisplayPort.
Yep.
I love it when it works.
Yep.
I hate it when it doesn't work.
Yep.
And it seems to not work for me at the most inopportune times.
If you have a monitor basically exactly next to your computer, fantastic. If you have to do anything funky with it ever, it's horrible.
Sometimes it doesn't even hot plug.
Yeah. It's wild. Hopefully they fix that stuff in the new version. I don't know how much I trust that, but, you know, hopefully. It's crazy fast. 80 gigabit per second of raw bandwidth, effective bandwidth of 77.37, which is pretty nuts. 8K at 60 hertz HDR, 8K at 60 hertz SDR.
Greater than 8K.
Greater than 8K at 60 hertz SDR. 4K at 144 hertz HDR.
Wow.
And 2x5K, so dual monitor,
I guess. Yeah, if you wanted to daisy chain.
Yeah, okay, at 60 hertz.
So, basically, this is the biggest leap forward in DisplayPort bandwidth ever. So, 1 and 1.1 were 8.6 gigabit per second. So, you could do 1440p at 60 hertz, which was a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
1.2. Doubled that, a little more than doubled that, so you could do 4K 60 hertz. That was a big deal because prior to that, to run 4K, you had to do two cables.
Dual cable,
and,
which
like,
is super
tiling
annoying.
On your display, which was really cheesy. It was bad time.
It was not good.
1.3 and 1.4 could do up to 25.92. So that was actually a pretty small leap forward. 4K 120 hertz or 8K at 60 hertz with DSC, which is, if I recall correctly, that acronym is the compression or the lossless compression. And then finally, DP 2.0 with, I love this. The acronym for it, the code name for it, whatever we want to call it, is UHBR, which
Uber.
To me sounds like Uber.
Uber
20, 77.37 gigabit per second. So this is a tripling in speed. Huge.
Nuts.
Absolutely
nuts.
Huge. So they've got not just one, but a few different bitrate modes. The fastest mode in DisplayPort 2.0 will top out at 80 gigabits per second of raw bandwidth, so about 2.5 times that of 1.3, 1.4. It also introduces a more efficient coding scheme, resulting in less coding overhead. So as a result, the effective bandwidth of the new standard will peak at 77.4, so that's 3 times. The physical characteristics. The port itself is staying. Yes.
That's good.
Both the port that we have now and the USB-C connector via the DP alt mode. Both the official ports for the new DisplayPort 2.0 standard and the number of pins and resulting high-speed data lanes is remaining unchanged. So it will continue to operate over 4 lanes. It also retains the packet-based approach to communication, which means that image data continues to be sent as packets over a fixed bandwidth link as opposed to pixel-centric pixel clock approaches. And so what has changed is that the rest of the physical layer has been almost entirely replaced. So with Thunderbolt 3, which is now a royalty-free standard,
yeah,
and is going to be called USB 4, I guess? Except not quite, because I think Thunderbolt branding, Intel is still going to be using as sort of like their best-in-class implementation of the USB 4 standard that is that has a lot of optional components. So Thunderbolt 3 is truly bidirectional, full duplex link, two lanes allocated for each direction. And DisplayPort is focused on sending large volumes of data in just one direction. So DisplayPort 2.0 reverses the two inbound lanes to outbound. Cool.
That makes a lot of sense.
I'm stoked as long as it actually works.
Yeah.
Yay. Exactly. And I guess, actually, that's kind of... Oh, yeah, we can talk
about the laser one.
Sure.
Yeah, so it's a new device developed by the Pentagon after the U.S. Special Forces requested it. Basically, everyone has a cardiac signature, and they can read that cardiac signature with an infrared laser. Apparently, it works through typical clothing like a shirt or a jacket, which surprised me.
Wow.
But apparently not a thicker, like, winter coat. But still a jacket, which blows my mind. And I'm assuming they're going to have... I'm kind of wondering if they're including, like, windbreakers as a jacket.
Hard to say.
I don't know.
I wonder if it's to do with thickness or to do with layers.
Layers might be a problem, too. I'm not sure. But apparently cardiac signatures are already in use for security identification. This has happened before. Canadian company that I'm going to butcher the name of, but I think it's NIME, has developed a wrist-worn pulse sensor as an alternative to fingerprint identification. A little crazy. Apparently, it can take a little while for it to kind of lock on, but it does work at a fairly far distance. So it's only really effective if the subject is sitting or standing, not really like moving around and stuff.
Got it.
Yeah.
So 200 meters it works from.
Pretty wild.
That's crazy.
Pretty wild.
So
one glaring limitation is the need for a database of cardiac signatures. But even without this, the system has its uses. But you could probably pretty easily get that, especially at like passport stations,
mm-hmm,
where people have to stand there for a while.
You could just install it and grab it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're handing them a passport. You're giving them your name and all your information. So you just match that up and create a national database really fast.
So it's called Jetson. In practice, it's likely to be used alongside facial recognition or other identification methods.
Yeah.
But in the long term, the developers believe, in addition to identification, it could be used to scan for arrhythmias and other conditions remotely. And hospitals could monitor the condition of patients without having to wire them up to machines, which I guess is cool.
Yeah.
But it's just yet another way that Big Brother will be watching, and there's no real preventing it at this point.
Yeah, this one's kind of hard to screw with.
The future is now.
Yeah.
Just start wearing like a plate over your chest.
I was thinking about, but it's not just that, because I think it can see it through your skin in general.
Yeah, I guess they don't even
have
to hit
your heart. You have a cardiac signature in like your arm.
Right.
Yeah. So you'd have to have clothing.
Lead clothes. Only solution, lead clothing.
You'd have to have clothing that like ripples intentionally. Like actively ripples. You'd have to have active clothing.
Active IR camouflage. All right then. So thanks for watching the WAN Show, you guys. See you again next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Goodbye. See you later. It's a vibrating chainmail.
'Vibrating chainmail.
It's on the chat.
Super chats.
Oh,
happy birthday, Preston. Happy birthday, Wyatt. Lazy AK47 says, saw you in a Pulsewave commercial. Any other commercials you're in or will be in? No, not at this time, but it is a service that Linus Media Group does offer, like commercial production. It's not something that we publicize a ton. So the only reason we ended up doing that with Pulseway was just because, like, I don't know, we just kind of ended up chatting about it. Like, it wasn't, I don't even know if it's on our website. But yes, it is something that we do. But no, there's nothing really planned right now. Bob says, cake or cupcakes? You know, I'm not a cake guy or a cupcake guy.
Me neither.
Give me a good muffin.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay, on this topic, because I wonder if we're the same about this too. Chocolate chip cookie, oatmeal raisin cookie.
Oatmeal chocolate chip.
Whoa. I don't think I've had that.
It's amazing.
Oatmeal's just better, in my opinion. Okay, sorry, we can keep going.
Yeah, see, I'm not that into chocolate chip cookies because they're usually crappy cookie.
Yeah.
And they just try to get by on the chocolate.
Yeah.
Doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Ilya, Linus, will you ever tell us about that colorful dragon tattoo you had about a half year ago? Yeah, I was just messing with you guys. It's just a spray-on thing.
Oh, that? People thought that was real?
A lot of people did.
Wow.
Well, I kept reapplying it. So it looked fresh for, like, quite a long time.
Oh. Yeah. Interesting.
I was just messing with people.
Yeah.
Video suggestion. A collab with your Bauer since he's coming to LTX anyway. The problem is that everyone and their dog is coming to LTX. And they're coming for LTX. And I'm going to be, like, scrambling in the lead up to LTX and then recovering from LTX. So unless they're, like, hanging around for a week, it's probably not going to be feasible. Other side guy. Would you agree that car culture and building custom cars and modding is similar to the PC space? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Hey, Linus, decided to blow $5 just to see you make a funny face. All right. Gap tooth granny. Brian says, Linus, if you phase yourself out, I'm going to Kermit.
What
is
Kermit?
What is Kermit?
I don't know.
David says, Linus has been a huge fan of your channel for years. Taught me a lot. Keep up the good work. Thank you. John says, AMD will probably move to 4 threads per core before Intel just to fully nut kick them. Yeah, they probably will. Oh, what did I click?
I don't know.
Oh, no.
The down arrow, maybe?
Oh, crud. Timo, I got my new LTT hat and hoodie with home door delivery. Post girl did apparently say that, so you didn't need to go to the post office. Man, Canada Post rocks in Finland. Great feedback. glad to hear. Shout out to my wife, Claire, who is probably listening to this tomorrow, says SEAL Team Ricks.
Hey, cool.
Midland says, good evening, Linus. Would you ever consider building your own studio, and what would you need in your dream studio? What a tremendous question. So, if I were to build my own studio, first, I would start with a ground floor with, like, a library for kind of, like, a quiet place to sit, an editing den for all the editors to sit and work together and collaborate, like, a camera area where we can build up our rigs and tear them down and store them safely, and, like, maybe a bathroom. Upstairs from that, I'd put a boardroom, I'd put my office, I'd put an office for my wife who does all the accounting so she needs privacy. I'd put another small office just in case we needed it in the future. Maybe a nice open space so that we could put cubicles or something like that.
Nice, nice, nice.
Another bathroom probably.
Yeah.
Then I'd expand it, okay?
Okay.
So I'd put Nick in my wife's office, I'd put her in mine, and then I'd move over to the other side where there would be three offices. Luke had one of them at one point, but we would have kicked him out by then.
Mm. Logical.
We'd leave one of them open for, like, meetings.
Yeah.
I'd take one of them. Then we'd have, like, an open space for the writers. Another bathroom. The more people you add, the more people need to pee.
Yeah.
I'd move the camera people out into the warehouse at that point. I'd probably start with three warehouse units, and I'd do, like, a green screen, like, an LTT set, like, a workshop, a TechLink set, and then, like, some storage area. Maybe a little nook for the WAN show. Then I'd probably get a couple more units. I'd add, like, an employee lounge and some more storage. And then
nice.
Maybe, like, a hardcore workshop with, like, modding stuff.
Sweet, yeah.
That's probably what I'd do.
Smart, considerate, concise.
That's what I'd do. I was being facetious. That's our studio.
Yeah, what did he mean? Did he mean that?
They probably didn't know that we have a studio.
Oh.
I'm just teasing. We have a studio.
Yeah.
We got our studio about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, I could understand why people don't know, because we intentionally changed the sets to look like a house. So anyone who started watching in the last year or two might not realize that the kitchen that we shoot in all the time is not a real kitchen. That was the whole idea.
Wow, that's so weird.
We wanted the videos to look less like a set and a studio and more like we just shoot out of a house like a normal YouTuber.
But you do videos out in the warehouse sometimes.
Sometimes. Not that often anymore.
Not that often?
No.
Weird. That makes sense.
Nicola, I'm going to an English course in Vancouver, but I'm missing LTX.
Oh, rude.
What could I do that's tech-related while visiting? Honestly, not much.
Ooh.
Redith says, are you going to do something ridiculous and cool with the Corning Optical
Thunderbolt
3 cable? Oh, yeah, go to Free Geek. Do that. That's a good idea.
Thank you.
Yes, I'd love to. They're supposed to send me one, but they haven't yet. Joshua says, there has been a way to add special IR commands to the power sequence on Harmony for many years. I think Logitech didn't want to blame the customer. Yeah, so the problem was that I couldn't. So you have to pick from a menu.
Yeah, we went over all that.
Other side guy. IMO, EVs haven't particularly taken off because the futuristic design employed makes them look tacky. Yeah, that's a fair point. That's only part of the problem, though.
Yeah.
Uphorix says, Bitcoin is on the rise again. Do you have anything in the works for a mining update? Nope. I'm out. Jake Legs Tech says, this is going toward a new stream PC. That's not the stream PC is not the problem. Also, see you at LTX. Okay, see you there. Johnny says, OG, you better make LTX just as big or bigger next year. My boss told me he will be pay next year due to he needs me at work in the holidays I had set aside for going, so you better. We will try. I honestly can't promise that, like, we're going to have 24 creators there again, because that is costing me a pretty penny.
The show itself could expand, though.
Yes.
And then maybe certain creators will just want to go anyways.
Ryan says, do you still ride your SV650? Yes. Other side guy, what's your thoughts on Australia being non-existent in the tech and gaming industry? It's really far. That's the only reason I've never gone.
There's actually a lot of tech fans in Australia.
Yep.
And there's a huge amount of tech sales that happen in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So the community is actually pretty decent. Getting a show out there is extremely expensive if you're not based there.
Yeah, because PAX has one. But I think that's it.
Yeah, and it's relatively small.
Yeah.
But again, it's extremely expensive. And getting a lot of the creators out there, a show like PAX is at the scale where they're not generally paying for creators to go.
Mm-hmm.
So the creators are going to be sponsoring themselves to go, or getting sponsorships to go. And both of those are way more difficult because it's really expensive and the ROI is a little bit different. It's a difficult market, but like... Yeah, the tech community in Australia is actually very
huge,
large.
Very vibrant.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, bye, guys.
Goodbye.